Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Once again, we have got the whole team in attendance. Former sporting director and team boss George Donaldson, the voice of Rally Colin Clark, Dirtfish senior staff writer David Evans, and me, the Rally fan, Lisa O'Sullivan. Now, we are done and dusted as far as events go this season. And going into Monza, we were talking about what might happen, what couldn't happen. And lads, David, Colin, you were there. The weather. Us Brits like nothing better than to talk about the weather, and the weather was a massive part in deciding this year's championship.
It was, Lisa, and it was a massive part in defining the whole event, to be totally honest with you. Don't forget Monza, it was a circuit-based Friday. It was all around the circuit on the link roads around this incredible... Do you know, the park that surrounds Monza, you think of Monza and you think of a Formula One track, but it's an awful lot more than that. It's Europe's largest walled park. It's really quite stunning. You can drive all around the park and not for one second realise there's a Formula One circuit just beyond the wall. It's an incredible place. But here's the thing. Formula One is dull. Dull as bat, whatever, until you get a little bit of weather. And that's exactly what happened to us at the circuit. We got some incredible weather and it got really, really exciting. Now, I thought it was great. I thought there was an awful lot to talk about. We had a lot of drama. We had a lot of suspense. We had a lot of action. But the one thing that concerns me about all of the hype about Monza, and it was great, is that an awful lot of it was weather dependent. And, you know, you'll hear folks saying, well, you know, what did you expect? You know, we're going up into the Alps, almost into the Alps in December time. Let me tell you, the weather we had last weekend was unusual. Speaking to locals, really, really, really unusual. And I think, well, you know, what would the event have been like if we'd had a completely dry week there? Would it have been as exciting? Would it have been as dramatic?
Yes, it would.
Yeah. Okay,
fantastic.
Well, that was put out there to us. I was prodding the beast with that, David Evans. Prodding the beast, and the beast responded in fine fashion. Go on, then.
Let's talk less about you prodding the beast, shall we? And more about the fact, Cole, that, yes, okay, the weather did have a big impact, but... you know, we've been to Monza Rally Show before. Even in the dry, it's fantastic. You know, you get so much action on that event. And don't forget, you know, if we lose the weather next year, hopefully with coronavirus, the vaccines coming and everything, we can have the fans back. So, you know, the one thing missing from Monza was an atmosphere. I have to say I wasn't there for entirely separate reasons, but I can only imagine that it was great. But... when you're there with tens of thousands of people, you know, Northern Italian rally fans are some of the most ardent and feversome in the entire world. Mm-hmm. So bring them along. You know, the weather, okay, it was important. And I see your point. Yes, it really did add something to it. But even if it's dry, you're still having the surface changes. You're still going onto gravel. You're still going through those narrow gates. It will be all action. I'm sure that's my view.
I agree. I was really just playing devil's advocate. I totally agree with you. I think, you know, it was a bit of a gamble, but I think it was a gamble that really did pay off handsomely, didn't it? You know,
it will. And you know, the Saturday, okay, we got a huge amount of snow, and it was very, very exciting. And we talked about it before. You know, us Brits love the weather, but I can't imagine that you would go there in the first weekend in December and not have to really take a gamble on tyres. You know, they go really high, don't they? They're going up to 4,500 feet. So you will get ice, you will get snow, you will get changing weather at that time of the year. So I think it's vital that they keep that middle day in the mountains.
Oh, I think, I think more than that. I really wouldn't want to see, you know, if we're going back to a proper schedule, you know, it's got to be 2 days in the mountains and a day at the circuit, or a day and a bit. Mm. Start it on a Thursday evening at the circuit, finish it on the Sunday at the circuit, and have two proper days of rallying in between. George, I don't know what your view on it is, but I think it's great. I think it's a fantastic concept. Bring them back for service, maybe do a super special in the evenings on the Friday and Saturday, but we need two proper full days of rallying. Otherwise, it is somewhere between rallying and a gymkhana. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm really not saying that's bad. And that might be the future. But right now, you know, I don't think we need to take that step.
Guys, honestly speaking, the Monza circuit itself, watching it last week, just left me cold. Sorry. It was honestly speaking boring. I was looking at cars being smashed to bits by a road that wasn't even good to watch. There you are.
Yeah, right. George, that's a reasonable point, David.
It is a very fair point, but we should also take into consideration, George, one thing we have to consider here is what Sebastien Ogier said. You know, we cannot keep going around the world thinking that we're going to have these classic rallies, Safari, Argentina. Yeah. We need these events which bring people to us, and that event will, when coronavirus allows, it will bring people to us. It will educate people in the WRC. Sebastien Ogier said as much.
David, I'm not saying I don't like the concept. I love the concept. It's how they set these stages up. You know, there's plenty there for it to be super interesting. And there was the odd little bit where we had cars doing fantastic high-speed drifts around corners and be super spectacular. But those were tiny little intersections on an otherwise fairly dull farm track rally that I used to do back here in the 80s in Scotland.
The trouble is, George, if they allow them to drift the full length of the parabolica, they've lost a whole corner, and they then can't use those small link roads that they need to bring the mileage in. It is a necessary evil that we've got to essentially run a single venue.
David, look, I'm not a fan. I'm not saying I'm not a fan of this type of stage and this type of event. You know, the old Sunday stages on the REC rally, the so-called Mickey Mouse stages. Mm. Some of them were brilliant spectacles, you know, they were.
Trentham Gardens, it's just, along the road from me, fabulous stage.
Trentham Gardens, I didn't crash there. I didn't crash there. I broke a diff in Bramham Gardens, I think it was. I broke a diff, but I managed to keep going by some major miracle. Some of the stages are great, and there were some bits of it. Maybe it was the way it was being portrayed by the TV, maybe it wasn't. It wasn't being shown in a brilliant way, because, you know, I'm like the number, you know, I always listen to the introduction to our program where, you know, Lisa says she's a rally fan. She's nothing compared to me, you know. I mean, I'm a former team boss. I am a crazy fan. I'm a lifelong fan. You know, from when I first saw my first rally car in the forest, I thought of nothing else. I mean, that's 45 years ago now, you know, fully more than that. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying I'm not a fan of them. It's the way it's portrayed. I felt a little bit let down by Monza. I was ready to be wowed by it, and I felt a little bit let down. But I'm sitting here watching it on the internet, on TV that I've paid for. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Just the usual sort of glitches that we get, a bit disappointing at times.
But
can you tell this program's being filmed, that we're making it really early in the morning and we're all grumpy as hell? Can you tell?
I'm all grumpy as hell. Wow.
I think George has got a point, though.
He has.
And a very interesting point about the fact that we're very different types of rally fans, because George has been at the business end of the sport for so many years, and I'm a millennial rally fan, I suppose, because I only discovered rallying this century. And it is a very different sport now to the one that it was in the 90s and the 80s before that. But in many ways, and especially I think in this COVID world, don't you think we need to go back a bit? Because we're not going to be having, which I felt we were heading towards, was controlled entry for fans into arenas to watch the cars going around, as you said, Gymkhana type scenarios, Colin, and go back to places where we are going to have, potentially in Monza, where we could have mountain stages where we see the fans go out and camp and get the whole experience of being a rally fan, rather than being someone who just pays their money, pops in, watches somebody work on a car, and then follows the rest on their device because they can get good Wi-Fi and see the drone pictures in the service park.
But at least I think this is a massive rallying philosophical question, isn't it? You know, where are we going? What is the future? What is it we're trying to do? You know, and who is dictating it? Who is writing the roadmap for the future? Is it the rally fans? Is it the promoter? Is it the manufacturers? Because to be totally honest with you, all of those parties have very different interests, that can only be satisfied in particular ways? It's a massive question. It's a massive question, Lisa. And I think, unfortunately, it's one that we're not addressing. And it's, we're not addressing cohesively. You know, the manufacturers are saying this is what we want to do. The promoter is saying we want to do it this way. The FIA is saying, but this is the way we're going to do it. And the fans are saying, well, we don't want any of that. And it's a massive question. There is very little cohesive thinking in terms of the future of rallying. And that's, you know, that worries me tremendously. I think Monza was a great example of how things can be. But again, it needs tuning. It needs fine-tuning. It wasn't perfect. As George said, you know, there was an awful lot that was actually quite dull, quite boring about it. And that was only enhanced by the weather. Go on, David.
No, I agree, and I agree with what George said. You know, fundamentally, that's not what I signed up for. But we're not the ones that we're not the ones that were in the car. You know, listen to Elvin Evans and, you know, to Scotty Martin, and these boys were saying that this was a massive challenge. And, you know, Julian and Gracia said it was a proper difficult event. But, you know, fundamentally, you look at the way that they laid out some of the circuit stages in Monza. You know, you came into a chicane one way one day, another way the next day for co-drivers. It was difficult. You know, it was a single venue rally gone bananas.
But it's difficult. If I set up some cones outside Tesco's in Stoke-on-Trent, that's going to be difficult. I mean, making it difficult is not difficult, to be totally honest.
No, it's not cold, but it was a challenge. That's my point. You know, it was a challenge. And I think we need to understand that the world is evolving. As much as it pains me and as it pains George, we do need to include these events. I'm not entirely, or an event. So maybe just one of these is enough.
One or two.
I'm not sure, though, Cole, that, the sort of disparate views that you're putting out there from the promoter and the FIA, I can see an element of that. But I think fundamentally, we all want to grow the sport. The issue is that, you know, the FIA has to govern the sport and the safety and all of that, whereas the promoter is trying to essentially commercialize it and trying to make money. Understandably, that's what it's there for.
That's my point, David. I think there's very obvious examples of where they're all going differently. And you're quite right. You know, it is When you look at those three or four elements that I talked about, there is one very common factor, and that is that if we grow the sport and the sport becomes more popular, then it works for everyone. That is true. It's how we get to that point that is difficult.
It is. And, you know, fundamentally, is the next generation of car, you know, this is a whole different question, but is the next generation of cars the right way to go? Well, perhaps one for another podcast.
We've talked about that incessantly, and I'm not sure that's the only issue. There are lots of issues around rallying right now. That is one of them.
Fundamentally, we need to make a bigger cake, don't we? Everybody likes a bigger cake, don't they, Cole?
Absolutely.
I do.
George,
I have a question
George,
for you.
George, do you think... One quick thing for you, George. Do you think the problem is, partly, the drivers that we're watching in WRC and the technology they have, the drivers are so good that what they're doing looks easy. So when you're watching it, you think, oh, yeah. But actually, in realistic terms, when we're watching them handle the cars on some of these circuits, we're not really giving them due credit for what they're doing because they just make it look so simple.
There's an element of that, absolutely, Lisa. But sorry, I stirred this particular hornet's nest by saying I was bored by it. But it's just I don't think it showcases the drivers and the cars to look as good as they are, and it just occasionally looked spectacular. It didn't always look spectacular, but, you know, I'm a big fan of the Monza style event. I think they did an incredible job getting those stages up in the mountains, and what stages they were, what drama we got. And the whole thing was, I mean, overall, as a worthy event in the WRC, I mean, yes, it was. And Colin, David, Lisa, you know that I'm a great believer in every test is a test, and it's all about managing those businesses. So, I mean, as far as the rally and the test goes, the event was fantastic, and I don't want to belittle it in any way. It's just that, honestly speaking, I was bored watching those stages on TV.
Well, that's my point, George, as well. I think there were too many of them, but that was a necessity. Yeah. That was a necessity with the situation we found ourselves in.
Yeah.
But can I move on to a
technical question?
They're better
off if they're 5 or 6 kilometres long.
George, it's quite a simple technical question, but I'm sure you'll answer it in some detail.
They're the best ones you can ask, Colin.
What are snow tyres for?
Well, what are snow tyres for, or what do they do?
What are they for? It's a mischievous question, George.
Well,
obviously,
they're a tyre that's engineered to give you grip when there's snow on the ground.
So why do we cancel stages? Further than that, why do we cancel stages when it's snowing?
Because you can't get the emergency services in, Colin. It's very simple. It's all to do with the mechanics of running the stage and rescue services.
Is that right?
You know, so is it? It absolutely is, 100%.
Okay. Do you not remember, Cole, that year when they cancelled Sweet Lamb and Heffron? You know, yeah. The cars could just about get through, but there was no chance. Did they not have a two-wheel drive ambulance or something?
It's actually getting to a potential scene of an accident. Because all of the emergency, as far as I'm aware, and certainly in that stage, I think it was stage 12 on Saturday afternoon, the snow didn't come till very, very late. It was a completely tarmac road until about 2 hours before the stage. So all of the emergency furniture, if you like, was in place, but I suppose it's then getting to any potential incident that might happen when the stage is running that's the issue, isn't it?
Engineer that particular response vehicle?
And anyway, they got it completely wrong because they cancelled the wrong stage, didn't they? They should have bloody cancelled stage 11.
No, well, they didn't. To cut a long story short, Colin... two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive is nothing compared to the mechanics of a snow tyre. I'll take a two-wheel drive car with snow tyres than a four-wheel drive cars on normal cross-country tyres. There's no comparison. The snow tyre wins every time. The technology in it and the technology in the chemistry of the rubber, of the design, of the way that the tyre actually, believe it or not, the tyre grips the snow, holds the snow, and snow sticks to snow.
Can I give you a graphic example of this? Our very, very good friend, Mr. Anthony Peacock, who, congratulations to Anthony Peacock, gets married today on Friday, the 11th of December.
Congratulations.
Anthony Peacock's getting married.
He is to his lovely lovely wife to be, Tanya. So we say a big congratulations to them. Dude. One of the best jobs that Piccolo Anthony ever took me on with Pirelli was to a snow dome, one of these indoor snow slope things. I guess it's all in the name. And he parked a load of cars at the bottom of the slope. One of them was a new Ferrari, I can't remember which one, on winter tyres, and the other one was one of those BMW X-Drive things on summer tyres. And he said, get in the car and drive it up the slope. Drove the Ferrari straight up, no bother. Got in the summer-tired four-wheel drive car, didn't get more than two car lengths. You are exactly right, George. You know, it's all in the chemistry.
And of course, just to cover Monza Rally and the stages were snowy. Stage 11 was snowy. Could the emergency services get through it? On continental Europe, they're very sensible with their tyres. Italy more so than as much so as any of the Alpine countries up there in northern Italy. All the vehicles have either cross climate or winter tyres on in winter, and it's just what everyone does because there's no way to survive without it. Here in Britain, for those listeners that are not domiciled here, we're unbelievably stupid. We don't get very harsh winters very often. When they do come, the country stops. It's a bit of a giggle unless you're stuck in a traffic jam. There are those of us that do fit winter tyres. It doesn't really help because you're still stuck behind someone that's not got them, careening towards you the opposite direction on their summer tyres without any chance of avoiding you. At least if you've got your winter tyres on, you can actually move to their side of the road where they're not, where they're meant to be, and they go to where you were.
But I can't tell you how many times I've changed into your winter tyres, the snow's usually gone from most parts of the country, not in Scotland, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I fit my winter tyres usually early November, and they're on until about April.
George,
down in southeast Essex, that I really don't need them.
Yeah, better snow this year. I've got my four-wheel drive Saab with winter tyres on it. I will be going anywhere.
I didn't realise your Saab was four-wheel drive. This Saab gets better and better.
And do you know what else it's got now?
Did you even know it had four-wheel drive, Colin?
Yes. But it's also now got privacy glass because I've had the back windows tinted. I am looking like the boss.
It's probably a lowrider with those centre hubs that spin after you stop.
I tell you what, this is an awful car. If it doesn't snow, we'll take it to the snow dome and drive it up the slope.
Do you know what was worrying
me, David?
We'll
get Piccolo to organise it.
While you're telling that story, David, I'm thinking, these snow domes, you can only go so far and then you hit a wall at the top. And I'm thinking, what if you slipped on the throttle and you went straight up and out the top?
As you well know, Colin, when I'm in a driving seat, anything is possible. But I do think we should move on here, and we should just consider we have a new world champion, don't we?
We do.
Well, and a repeat world champion.
No, a new world champion. Last year we had Oit Tanak. This year,
yes. But he has been world champion before.
He has. That's the odd six times.
I mean, it was a fantastic... Yeah, Sebastien Ogier, what a result for him to actually keep his head and do what was needed to take the title. I mean, it was a class performance by him, really, wasn't it? No theatrics, no showboating, just getting the job done as those around him fell away.
And that's kind of my point a little bit about Monza. I did think, you know, my biggest fear was that, the same as most of the drivers and all of us, that Monza wouldn't provide a fitting finale in terms of a sporting challenge to the culmination of this year's championship. And I do think it did.
It did, David. It really did. As George said, the circuit stages were... They were challenging. They were difficult enough as they were, but what really made Monza for me were the mountain stages. They were absolutely fantastic. And Andy,
talk about Ogier now. We've done all that mountain stuff.
I know,
stuff.
But we're talking about Ogier and Ogier dealing with it. Dealing with it, and others not dealing with it. And there weren't many drivers that had clean weekends, and Ogier was one of them. And he, you know, David, you interviewed him, I think, last week, didn't you, or the week before last, where he said, "You know, my opportunity this year will come with the weather," and it was bang on. It was absolutely bang on, wasn't it?
What a fabulous prediction, Colin. What a fabulous prediction.
Saw the weather coming. He sat tight. He was quick. He was, you know, he was careful. And he kept the pressure on. And do you know what? At the end of the day, and Evans has more or less said this himself, it was the pressure that Ogier kept on him that almost forced that accident. He was saying as he was driving through, you know, "This is too slow. It's too slow. It's too slow." Even although every driver knows when you're driving a four-wheel drive, World Rally car, 400 horsepower on slushy snow, it feels like you're crawling, and it always feels too slow. But unfortunately, Evans had let that get into his head that he was driving too slow. He wasn't. He was massively quick, many seconds up on the split, and he was just overly quick into that corner. And you've got to say, yes, it was a mistake from Evans, but probably there was an element of the pressure from Ogier, David, as well there.
You absolutely, and one thing before we go any further, we don't give enough credit to our colleagues at Dirtfish. You know, Matt Beer, Jack Cousins, these the backroom boys of the website, if you like. It was one of them that came up with the legendary headline where Ogier says snow could make me world champion. Yep. Bang, you know, a week out, they absolutely called. And George, you're dead right, George. You know, the weather, of course, it was going to have an impact. But yeah, I think to go back to your point, Colin. There was huge pressure on Elvin, and it was such a difficult position. George, you'd know about this. You know, a gap of 14 points is kind of in the middle, isn't it? You know, it's not two or three points.
It's almost a curse in a strange way.
It's not especially enough,
when,
is it? To...
Especially when things get difficult. And, you know, look, I mean, I don't know how many times I've gone over what happened to Elvin. You know, obviously I was watching it as it happened, and... I mean, I hate to say this, but you know, and I'm sure half the team sitting there in the Toyota team sitting there in the control room at the event were looking at it, thinking, "What's he doing?" He looked like he was trying to win the event on that stage. From my perspective, from his perspective, of course, he was driving like a granny and not quite going fast enough. And you know, he just lost. He lost his place. He lost his surety. You know, you've got to go in there sure that you're right with your pace and not allow, as you say, you're driving a 400 horsepower rally car. You could be going faster with a 90 horsepower Ford Fiesta, for goodness sake, you know, shopping car. You could probably go just as fast with one of them as you could with those 400 horsepower rally cars in those conditions. And so you don't feel like you're driving fast. And it's important to keep a grip. I mean, what were the splits saying? It was about 9 seconds quicker than anyone else on the previous split. Mm. Yeah, you can see exactly what happened. He just lost that surety, that sure-footedness that he's displayed throughout many events this year. He just lost it there for a few seconds. He just allowed himself... I mean, you know, I'm not going to dissect what he's done. It would be dreadfully unfair to both him and Scott. But, you know, they're a team in the car. You've not got the splits. You've got to make that judgment call. And he just didn't get it right, basically. And it's okay, you know, everyone gets it wrong. Horribly critical time to get it wrong, but he did. He just lost that little bit of focus. And this is by no means a criticism. I was just about, you know, filled with disbelief, and you've no idea how many times I've sat in management rooms on events, you know, with a driver in a situation, you know, not dissimilar, where you've got a lead and or an advantage, and you're just sitting there waiting for the inevitable to happen and hoping it doesn't. Mm. And it was just one of those. Basically, I was having to tune in and out of the event because I couldn't stand the tension of it. Really, I genuinely couldn't take the tension.
I think there must have been an element of that for us all, because, you know, we've all watched Elvin, haven't we? And you know, we've watched him absolutely through his career, and, you know, been great fans of his father before that with Gwyndaf, and it was a proper heart in the mouth moment. But I have to say, you know, okay, in that stage, it did look very difficult and compromised. But until then, you know, he'd looked like the safest of safe pair of hands.
And that's what made it so hard, because he'd actually genuinely looked like the guy that was going to just keep it steady and keep it right. And I was a little bit shocked at because, as I say, I was tuning in and out of it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. What's going on here? You know, has everyone got past him? Because, as I said, I was tuning in and out, and you know, I'm looking at it on my phone basically, and it's hard to get all the results and everything up at the same time when you're tuning in and out of it. Mm. You know, an old page will be. I mean, I had points where I had very false results appearing on my phone at points. I'm thinking, has Elfin having to push like crazy? And then just literally as I was watching it, I mean, you could see it before it happened. You're thinking, holy shit. There's the line on the inside that looks like someone's gone off on the inside of the corner. They're so close to the rock face. And then there's Elfin in completely the wrong place on the road for a snow line, obviously, and going like hell. And I mean, you know, he knew, I mean, what did he know, 30, 40 metres before he got to the corner, he knew he was away. Mm. Enough time to be able to spin the car around and do what he could. It wasn't a quick accident in that respect. He could see it coming and tried to mitigate everything that he could, including, you know, going off backwards, which was the right thing to do. And gee whiz, what a heartbreak.
But it's
so hard to judge. I mean, I'm not, this isn't by no means a criticism. And I mean, I so wanted Elfin to win. I really did. Very, very, I mean, I'm a big fan of our two French World Rally Champions that we've had for more or less the last 20 years. Big fan of Ott Tanak, but when you get a new guy coming in, you know, especially someone with the character of Elfin, who is so self-effacing, so modest,
but capable. Let's not forget here that, you know, Sébastien Ogier lost the lead of the championship through, he had a puncture on that Çetinkaya stage the first time through in Turkey, but then he had a transmission problem and ultimately the engine failed on his car. You know, it wasn't really his fault that he lost the lead of the championship. And, you know, he has driven as much as Elfin has driven. He's driven a champion's drive through this year. He is deserving of the championship. But like you say, George...
Well, this is what I like about the whole thing, David. You're absolutely right. But this is what I love about rally. Ultimately, it's the person that sorts everything out the best at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And the challenges are many. I mean, Monza, I mean, I'm sure it was actually more fun to drive than it was to watch. And a couple of times when I saw little bits in the camera, I thought, oh, that must be brilliant, you know, coming into that corner. Mm. You know, they're in fifth gear, maybe sixth gear, and a massive drift. Brilliant. I mean, it's so spectacular. And the rest of it is a survival job. And, you know, I was also thinking about they're running on snow tyres on gravel. Pretty bad combination. Snow tyres are, generally speaking,
quite soft,
very vulnerable, very soft sidewalls to give them compliance, so they puncture more easily. And we did see that, of course. We did see people suffering from that. Obviously, the rally tyres are not like road tyres, snow tyres, soft, but they are a bit more vulnerable to those chips and tips. So, yeah, I mean, I was left pondering on the fact, should we just actually, you know, we've got rid of the tyre competition between manufacturers. Should we just say this is the tyre you're using for these stages and it's the same for everyone? Take that little equation out of it I'll hear the squeals and objections to that idea, but...
No, because of what you've just said, George. You know, you've just said that Sebastien Ogier, it's the driver who makes the best of what they've got. And that's exactly what he did.
And he did that 100%. A very, very worthy champion.
I'm not sure.
And let me just put this into perspective. I do think that Monza was a very worthy event. I'm a big fan of every stage, and it's all about dealing with that. And it was. I could see how tough it was. Horribly tough. It was tough to watch. I've always been a big fan of Sebastien Ogier because he's really Relling's number one fan himself. How can you not love the guy?
It was a phenomenal year, George. And I'm trying to think while you're talking there, and you give me plenty of time to think while you talk.
Well, thank you, Colin.
I do listen, though. I'm trying to think of a mistake that Ogier has made this year, and nothing is coming to mind. I'm sure I'll be put right on that. But he has absolutely dealt with everything that's been put in front of him. And the other thing we mustn't forget, you know, it's dead easy. When you get to 5, 6, 7 world titles, you just trot out the numbers, and you don't think of actually the context behind those numbers. 7 world titles with 3 different manufacturers. His first year with Volkswagen, he wins the title. His first year with M Sport, he wins the title. His first year with Toyota, he wins the title. For me, okay, you know, Kankinen won 3 titles. He was, what, 4 times champion, David Kankinen? Three different manufacturers. Ogier is right up there. Right up there with the very best we have ever seen. And I think there's no question about that. And I think, you know, the result last week just confirmed it. It didn't make him the best there's ever been. For me, it just reaffirmed it. He really is.
But also, Cole, you know, just to jump in there, you know, the grace with which he did it. You know,
the
words that he said, and, you know, we are very quick to forget, and, you know, perhaps this isn't something that we should get into, but, you know, there is a worldwide crisis going on at the minute, and I can't think of many drivers that would have put it in the same fashion and been quite as lucid in his opinion about putting it into context. You know, he had achieved greatness for the 7th time, but, you know, in his words, he wasn't jumping for joy because of what's going on. And, you know, he's just, we said it before a million times, he's genuinely a great guy, and he really is. But I have to say, we have seen the evolution of Elvin Evans. And for me, you know, we don't have any more. We don't have a big 3. We have a big 4 going into next year. And Evans is right in there with just as good a chance as anybody for next
big
year.
Big 4. I suggest we have a big 5.
Can I mention one more thing before we leave this subject?
Big 5.
Colin, it was just the aplomb and dignity with which... all the Hyundai drivers dealt with making sure that they got the manufacturers' championship. You know, we saw Ott Tanak, basically, you know, he could have really gone for it, taking huge chances to try and get his 29 points to try and get a win, a long shot. But, you know, rallies are all about long shots. Championships are about long shots. But he didn't. He played that championship game for his team. Yeah, I think Ott did an amazing job at the weekend of restraint and driving the team game.
And Danny
amazing.
Sordo. What a drive
Danny
from
Sordo.
Danny Sordo.
Well, that's just unbelievable.
He's
Danny,
always been a great
Danny,
team player.
Danny is now driving as well as he ever does. 100%. As well as he ever has. Possibly slightly better.
I'd agree with
unbelievable
that.
Level of maturity. Of course, rallying is about experience. And as long as you're still sharp and you're still... and you're still brave, because rallying is unfortunately about a lot of bravery. As drivers get older, they're maybe not as willing to take chances. Well, quite clearly, Danny's still willing to hang it out over the edge. Coupled with the experience, he can hang it right out over the edge and bring it back every time, it seems. Well, you know, every time, but most of the time, it's brilliant. Great job, and a great job from Hyundai to manage that. It was unbelievably tough. For a while there on Saturday, it really genuinely looked like Toyota were going to snatch the pair out of them.
There is the argument, though, that and perhaps, you know, we have to move on and bring this one to a conclusion. But here's one for you. Is Hyundai a fitting manufacturer champion when Toyota drivers finished 1-2?
Absolutely, David. I've heard this argument, and it baffles me. It baffles me, you know.
Then read the story on Dirtfish, Colt. It explains it in very straightforward terms.
Who wrote the story?
Me.
I guess you might.
I've done the maths and looked at the percentage of points that Kelly Rovanpera added and the percentage of points that Hyundai's third driver added through the year.
Yeah.
It's a strategic game. That Andrea Adamo plays, and he plays it well within the rules, and that's fine. He gets on with it, but there is, you know, you can also have some sympathy for what Sebastian Ogier says when, you know, they stand there as 1-2 in the drivers' championship, yet they lose the manufacturers. But
no, I have no sympathy for that, none whatsoever, I think it's a fair fight. It's a fair game. Everyone is presented with the same set of rules. How you interpret and utilize those rules to your advantage is entirely up to you. And what we know is that Mäkinen and Adamo are two very different characters. Mäkinen has never, never employed team tactics. Adamo is always looking to employ team tactics. He's always looking for the opportunity. He's always looking to maximise what he's got.
Tommy has used team tactics once or twice.
This year?
No, not this year, George.
He has in the past.
Absolutely.
Adamo knows what he's got. Yeah. And you would be a fool. You would be an absolute fool not to use what you've got at your advantage. And Adamo has done that brilliantly.
That's it. And, you know, Toyota doesn't have that option because they've gone with a totally different strategy of developing, you know, who Kalle Rovanperä, who is going to be your fifth driver, I'm sure that you're going to add into the equation next year.
And I think it'll pay off handsomely next year, David. I think it'll pay off handsomely next year.
Could we then say that we have a big 4¾? Because I'm not sure Rovanperä is 100% a championship challenger yet.
Yes, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. And we'll wait till 4¾. We'll wait till maybe Croatia, just after Croatia next year, to decide whether he's a championship challenger. I think by then we'll see he is.
Rallying's about
experience, guys, every time. And Danny Sordo shows you that. Sebastian Ogier shows you that.
Yeah, but
even Elfyn Evans.
But George, we sometimes have drivers who come along and their performances absolutely belie their lack of experience. You know, it's more than that. It's their speed and their natural ability to understand the cars, the surfaces, the changing conditions. You explain to me how someone like Oliver Solberg can do what he did in that R5 car in such new conditions to him, new conditions to most drivers. You're experiencing things he'd never experienced in a rally car, and he put in the most sensational performance. Sometimes you get guys like him, you get guys like Rovanpera who come along and experience. It is always still an element, but the experience element is reduced by their natural ability and their intelligence.
But they're freaks, Cole. They are absolute freaks, aren't they? Because they have that, it's the same, isn't it? You know, if it's Michael Jordan, you know, with a basketball in his hand, whatever, you get these unbelievable natural abilities, and that's what they've got. And you know that I was talking to Petter a couple of days ago, and I said to Petter, you know, for me that was one of his best ever drives, the fact that he had the feel, because it's right, isn't it, George? You know, you the car talks to you, the tires talk to you, they feedback constantly. And it's so easy just to tip it a little bit over the edge. But no, you're quite right there, Cole. You know, he was sublime. And then on the final day, to have the maturity and the presence of mind not to risk everything and chase Mickelson and risk it, and just to, you know, settle for what was a sensational result. It was super impressive.
But he put in his best performance in Stage 11. Stage 11 was
the one that should have been cancelled.
Anyway, guys, it's been a fantastic talk, but it's time for
peanut butter on toast,
and then to take the kids to school.
Before you go and get your butter out to slap on your toast, we're not seeing very many driver changes, but there is one massive change happening in the sport, kind of right at the top as well. Are we saying goodbye to Tommy Mäkinen, do you reckon, at the end of the year?
By
all accounts, Toyota have moved them on. Basically, they've said, Tommy, thank you for that. You've gifted us a great team. We're gonna take it over now, and we're gonna run it ourselves. Thanks very much. And I mean, basically, I think it was It was strangely done very quickly. But we know also that Tommy has been talking about going back to farming. I mean, I know personally that he loves nothing better than to sit in one of the forest harvesters and go away and go logging with one of these 750,000 euro logging machines. He's a complete and absolute contradiction in terms, Tommy. Running a rally team one minute, driving a plough down the field the next, cutting out, you know, in a $750,000 euro forest harvester. The guy just loves doing lots of different things. Maybe he'd had enough. You know, it's a lot of late nights, a lot of worry. Maybe he just actually said, guys, I'm out of it at the end of the year. Just, you know, let's do it. And then they've just jumped on it and said, that's it, fine, we're out.
But I have to say, what he did though with that team was quite sensational. You know, we remember
absolutely
back to
sensational.
The interviews with the guys at ProDrive before the start of the 2017 season, and they said, you know, he won't be winning rallies for 2, maybe 3 years.
Cole, beyond that, people were saying halfway through 16, that car won't be ready.
It was rotten. It was absolutely rotten. There's no question about it. You know, we can go back and discuss all of that. But we won't, you know. But there were reasons why that car then sensationally leapt forward in its development. But at the end of the day, Tommy Mäkinen had the vision for that car and he stuck to it rigidly. And he didn't listen to other people. He did things his own way. He delivered a win on his second rally. He delivered a championship in his second year. He delivered 2 drivers' championships and a manufacturers' championship over 4 seasons. And that, for a start-up rally team, was quite sensational. And he was his own man, and he wasn't easy at times. I unfortunately had my run-ins occasionally with Tommy, but I have nothing but respect for what he did with that team. You know, he stuck to it.
But I just got to take you to task over one thing, Cole.
What?
That wasn't assault, what Tommy did to you. That was a slap on the back.
It was assault.
It might have been...
We don't mention that in public, but it was a friendly...
It was a hearty slap on the back.
3 metres across the room.
But you learned a lesson from that slap on the back.
I'm not sure I did. But anyway...
Well, what next? We will keep you up to date with what next on dirtfish.com. Just because the WRC season's finished, don't for one minute think that David Evans is going to be putting his feet up and not bringing us any more fabulous stuff on the website. So make sure you check dirtfish.com every morning for your big fix of rally news. Guys, it's been an honour and a privilege yet again working with you eminent brains.
There was no need for the laugh after that.
Yeah, took it all away, Lisa. Yeah, that did.
We'll be back. We are going to talk green next time,
Yay.
David Evans.
Yay!
Electric vehicles. George and David on one side, and Colin and me on the other. Yeah. Tune in again.
I'm not on any side. I'm on the side of the future.
Let's get off green.
I'm not rapidly green. Go away.
Bye, Lisa.
Love you all.
Bye.